Opinions expressed herein are subject to change and not necessarily the opinion of the firm. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. The information presented herein is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide personal investment advice. It is important that you consider your tolerance for risk and investment goals when making investment decisions. Investing in securities does involve risk and the potential of losing money. The material does not constitute research, investment advice, or trade recommendations.
And now introducing Mr. Keith Lanton.
Good morning. It's Keith. So get started this morning, October 5th. We are less than 1 month to Election Day here in the United States. So markets digesting lots of information, lots of news, and we'll talk about all that this morning. But first, want to back ourselves up and think long term and just think of general investing and best approaches to do that. Then we'll talk about the news this morning, and then we will talk about some articles in Barron's as well that I think some interesting thoughts on income and on bonds. And then Brad will also give us his insights into the markets. So backing us all the way up, a good article, and wanted to share it with everyone on the rules that make Tudor Jones successful. And I think it's always good to revisit how to go about making investments and when to reassess and when to perhaps add to a position that's either up or down. So some thoughts from a very successful investor. He's got several rules that I will share with you. Matter of fact, he's got 10 of them. And the number one rule is something that is counter to human nature. Cut losers short and let winners run. Oftentimes, people have big egos, have difficulty admitting mistakes. We all do. It's part of what's embedded in most people's DNA. Most people who are involved in financial markets think that they have an innate skill, that they can pick winners, that they can decipher the stocks that are going to bounce back from the ones that aren't, and those happen to be the stocks that that are there losers, and that those are the ones that are going to come back, and that is a recipe for overconfidence and for market underperformance. Rule number two, invest with specific end goals. If you don't, you are making a big mistake. So before you make any investment, you should already know the answer to the two following questions. One, at what price will I sell or take profits if I'm correct? And two, where will I sell if I am wrong? Tudor Jones, number three, emotional and cognitive biases are not part of the process. So if you catch yourself saying any of the following to yourself or hearing it from any of your clients, you know that you're going down the wrong path. If an investment decision starts with, I feel that, or my friend told me, or I heard, or I hope, you're setting yourself up for a potentially bad experience. Number four, follow the trend. 80% of portfolio performance is determined by the underlying trend. If you're trying to pick inflection points, turning points, bottoms, you're going to have a hard time in the long term with investing successfully. Number five, don't turn a profit into a loss. Again, going back to rule number two, what level is it that you're going to take profits? If you have a profit, it becomes a loss. Your investment strategy of getting back to even is not a strategy. It means that you've got to reassess how you go about investing and what strategies you're going to employ in the future. Number six, odds of success improve greatly when technical analysis supports fundamental analysis. I'm a big believer in this, that number one, you've got to be comfortable with the fundamentals, the business the company's in, but number two, you want some verification from the markets that the technical analysis looks good. This is verification that perhaps that the action in the stock is reflective of your optimistic scenario for the fundamentals. When there's a disconnect between the two, very often when things aren't aligning, there's something perhaps that you're missing in the fundamentals. Number seven, try to avoid adding to losing positions. Cutting losers short allows for more significant growth over time. Paul Tudor Jones once said, only losers add to losers. Number eight, in bull markets, you should be long. In bear markets, neutral or short. This again reflects the thought of investing against the major trend of the market is like trying to swim upstream. You're extending a lot of energy and you're not making much headway. You want to go with the tide, not try and go against it. Invest first with risk in mind, not returns. Can't emphasize that one enough. While portfolios may return to even after a catastrophic loss, the precious time lost while getting back to even can never be regained. Investors who focus on risk first are less likely to fall prey to greed. And finally, remember, rule number 10 is that you are not going to bat 1,000. In baseball, if you're a fantastic hitter, one of the best who ever lived, you're batting in the high 300s. If you bat 400, you're a hero, and that's only a 40% success rate. In investing, a fantastic success rate is considered 70%. That still means that 30% of your investment ideas are not going to work out. And if you don't follow those other rules, cut the losers, follow the trend, and adhere to those theses, you're going to get caught up possibly wind up with following those 30% stocks, the ones that aren't working out, cutting your flowers, watering your weeds, and having a challenging time in the long run. Some quotes for some other investors who adhere to similar principles. Howard Marks, well-known investor. Warren Buffett often reads Howard Marks. The biggest investing errors come not from factors that are informational or analytical, but from those that are psychological. He also said the absolute best buying opportunities come when asset holders are forced to sell. Benjamin Graham, who Warren Buffett is a disciple of, said the investor's chief problem and even his worst enemy is likely to be himself. And finally, when it comes to monitoring risk, you may have all the greatest ideas in the world, but if you're out of chips or in investing, if you run low on money at a time when the market's way down and you can't redeploy capital, you're either out of the game or you're unable to play the game and you're unable to capitalize on the weakness that is deemed a opportunity. So moving on to financial markets. This morning, the biggest news over the weekend, obviously, was the condition of the president, who's in Walter Reed Hospital, has received some treatment for COVID-19. Report just out just now that Trump and his medical team will decide later today whether he's discharged, that coming from the president's chief of staff. But we're seeing futures higher this morning, and this has something to do with a tweet that President Trump sent from Walter Reed talking about the stimulus. President Trump tweeted, "Get it done." And this having to do with the fiscal relief bill. Reports that both Speaker Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin have been talking throughout the weekend, and markets are cautiously optimistic that given President Trump's encouragement, as well as the fact that talks are ongoing, that perhaps deal can be done for further stimulus. Markets overseas moving higher. The Nikkei up 1.2%. In Japan, the Hang Seng up 1.3%. European stocks index is up about 0.6%. Dow futures, I mentioned, up 200. S&P futures up a little over 21 over fair value. NASDAQ futures are up about 70. Russell 2000 futures are up about 20 points over fair value. The only market in the red, just slightly in the red, is the Shanghai market, which was down about 0.2%. Oil rebounding this morning, up about $1.50 a barrel, up about 4%. Natural gas also up 4%. Gold up about $3 an ounce, about 0.2%. Taking a look at the dollar this morning, dollar is slightly weaker against most major currencies. When we take a look at interest rates this morning, we are seeing interest rates ticking modestly higher. Bond yields moving up slightly. 2-year yield is at 13 basis points. That's flat. The 10-year is at about 0.72. That's up 2 basis points from where it was last week. Taking a look at some other stocks in the news this morning, Regeneron in the news, President Trump receiving an antibody cocktail that is produced by Regeneron. This is a cocktail that has not yet been FDA approved, But nevertheless, the encouragement that it was given to the president is something that is given as a validation that perhaps it's a treatment worthy of using. And the stock's up about 30 points or about 5%. Also, Gilead, G-I-L-D, this morning up about 2 points, about 3%, 3.5%. Remdesivir, another drug used over the weekend to help the president. AT&T, symbol T, is down about 1% after the stock was downgraded to underweight from sector weight at Key Bank. Some other news regarding the president's health. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA head of the FDA, opining this morning on CNBC that we should know later this week if President Trump is out of the woods, citing that patients that do well at the outset in the first week tend to have better outcomes. Also in the news, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says previously scheduled floor activity will be rescheduled until after October 19th. Senators will be given at least 24 hours notice should votes need to occur during the pro forma posture, which is before October 19th. Some new polls out over the weekend showing after the debates that former Vice President Biden's lead over President Trump has increased slightly since the last debates. At least that's what the polling is showing. In New York City, Mayor de Blasio says non-essential businesses and schools will close on Wednesday due to coronavirus in 9 zip codes in Brooklyn and Queens. Airbus saying that they're eliminating 15,000 jobs. This on the heels of some job furloughs last week at Disney, as well as some furloughs by some airlines. Reports that the Trump administration may launch an antitrust lawsuit against Google as soon as this week. That's being reported by Politico. Johnson & Johnson in the news, the CEO saying a COVID vaccine is not likely until next year. A lot will depend on the Phase 3 test results there. In the M&A news, Bristol-Myers is going to buy heart drug developer MyoKardia for about $13 billion. This is a cash deal, significant premium to where MyoKardia closed, as Bristol-Myers seeks to diversify away from an oncology-heavy portfolio to include more cardiac products. Cineworld saying that they are going to be shutting down their U.S. theaters. 45,000 workers may be furloughed there. They run the Cinemark chain of movies. This is after many movies, including just over the weekend, the new James Bond movie, No Time to Die, being delayed, originally set to hit the big screen in April. Then it was delayed till November, and now that movie is not coming out until April of next year. Time to Die is a movie that was co-produced by MGM and Comcast Universal Pictures. So movie industry continuing to have a very rough time as the coronavirus dramatically impacting movie theaters. Here in New York State, Governor Cuomo still not allowing theaters to even open, despite letting other businesses open, and theaters have been very dismayed by that decision here in New York. So moving on to Barron's, I'm going to mention a couple of articles. One was a interview with Fidelity's Will Danoff. Some consider him one of the best stock investors in the world, and that's based on his track record. He runs the Fidelity Contra Fund. His fund has returned 13.7% per year, and that's over a course of almost 30 years. So when you've got that sort of performance, and the S&P over that time is up about 10.4%, so if you are outperforming the S&P 500 by over 3% a year for 30 years, you're probably someone whose opinion is at least worth listening to. What's interesting is that Mr. Danoff makes big bets even for a big fund. The Fidelity Contra Fund is over $130 billion. The fund holds 294 stocks, yet nearly half of its assets are in the top 10 holdings. Among them are the tech giants that have been leading the market. What's also interesting is he doesn't own any big oil or telecom companies, at least at the time of the publishing of this article. His opinion on the market right here is he thinks that the market is at the moment rational, if you're looking at least medium term. He said every company is accelerating their digital transformation. That's helping a lot of tech companies. He says, I'm keeping it simple and staying with companies where work at home, study at home is more of a tailwind than a headwind. Let's face it, interest rates are low. This is going to be more stimulative for housing. And you've seen a lot of speculation in the stock market. He says there are still 15 million people out of work despite the improvement in the employment trends we saw in the employment report on Friday. So he feels that there will be more stimulus from the government, and we're hearing about that this morning with some hopes regarding the next phase of stimulus. When talking about what he's learned over his long 30-year career, he says if a stock has doubled or tripled, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't get on board, you can't be frozen, you could still be in the early innings even if a stock is up significantly. He also said that it's critically important advice he has is to remain around youth, young people. That's how he learns about new investment ideas. That's the group that he often bounces his investment theses off, even when he doesn't necessarily understand the thesis. For example, when Uber first started or Lyft first started, or when young people were talking about Venmoing and PayPal was taken off, he says that he was able to capitalize on those ideas by leveraging the young people on his team and staying in touch with them and treating them as equals. They also asked him about Berkshire Hathaway, which is one of his largest holdings. And when asked about it, he says, I like to partner with super smart executives with skin in the game who are thinking about shareholders first. He says that although Berkshire hasn't been perfect, Warren Buffett hasn't been perfect, he is comfortable with Warren's strategy and likes the fact that he runs it with his own money heavily invested, and he is not paying himself an exorbitant amount to run Berkshire. Some income ideas from Barron's, and then we'll turn it over to Brad with some more income expertise. Barron's talked about one sector that's very down and out and contrarian, and that is pipeline stocks within the energy sector. They talked about pipeline closed-end funds and mentioned some stocks specifically as well. They mentioned Enterprise Products, EPD, Magellan Midstream Partners, MMP, Kinder Morgan. That group right there is down an average of 44% this year. They say there's no surprise given the entire energy sector is out of favor following the plunge in crude oil prices, the growth of an ESG or environmental, social, and governance and sustainable investing trends. All of that has helped dampen demand for traditional energy stocks. But Barron's saying, yet even with the growth in renewables, oil and gas will likely remain an important part of U.S. energy needs in the coming decades, and pipeline operators perform a critical role in energy transportation. And that's why they think that right now there is a bargain basement opportunity in the sector. They suggest one of the ways to play the sector is through closed-end funds, although you could buy some of the individual companies as well. They say that the closed-end funds focus on pipeline companies. They traded a large discount right now, over 20% pretty much across the board versus an average of less than 10% for traditional closed-end fund companies. And this is in a sector where you're looking at yields if the dividends sustain themselves, which is always a concern. But dividend yields in general ranging anywhere from 5 to 15%. And this is because companies like Enterprise, Magellan, and Energy Transfer, which often have significant leverage, are currently yielding very high returns due to their recent sell-off. They talk about the closed-end funds, some of which are down 75% already this year, and they talk about the fact that right now these funds are experiencing not only the pressures of being out of favor, but also pressure from year-end tax selling. Also keep in mind many hedge funds have an October 31st year-end, so that's currently pressuring the stocks as well. But Barron's saying that investor concerns seem to have already reflected these concerns. They talk about Magellan Midstream, which is yielding about 12%, Enterprise Products yielding 11%, Kinder Morgan yielding about 8%. Magellan recently said it expects to maintain its distribution during 2020. Barron's saying that they think Kinder Morgan's payout looks safe. One of the other people quoted in the article says that industry leader Enterprise at 44% this year. And yielding about 11%, has low financial leverage and amongst the best covered distributions in the business. Moving back to the closed-end funds, I'll mention a few mentioned in Barron's here. They mention the First Trust MLP and Energy Income Trust. The symbol is FEI. It's down about 55% year-to-date, yielding about 12.9%, 24% discount to net asset value. Tortoise Essential Assets Income Term, TEAF, is the symbol. It's yielding a little bit less, 8.5%, 28% discount. Part of the reason for the discount there for the Tortoise Essential Fund, TEAF, is they don't only own pipelines, but they also own some renewable energy assets as well. TEAF went public in early 2019, so a little over a year and a half ago, and it went public at 20. It's now trading below 11. It's trading at about a 28% discount to net asset value, and it's yielding 8.5%. Finally, last article, talking about the bond market, how to build the best bond portfolio for crazy times. This is a challenging environment, very low interest rates, especially for assets that provide safety. So bonds have gone from the sleep at night portion of investors' portfolios to a source of anxiety due to the latest shift in Federal Reserve policy. Finding income in bonds has gone from exceedingly difficult to nearly impossible, and finding safety in them might be increasingly elusive as well. The fixed income portion of a portfolio used to be where you got safety and income. Now you can get one or the other, and even the safety portion can be a portfolio danger. People point to Japan, where yields stayed low for a long time, but if you're looking at Japan, the real inflation-adjusted yields were actually positive because Japan was experiencing deflation. Even though our yields are slightly higher than they are or were in Japan, our yields on a real-time basis, so when you factor in inflation, are negative. So it's even more challenging in this near-zero interest rate world to truly get a return on your money after inflation and after taxes here in the U.S. So what does this Barron's article suggest investors do? They advocate a barbell strategy, and this is the strategy employed by many of the bond experts and portfolio managers cited in this article. What does a barbell approach mean? Well, if you think about a barbell from weightlifting, you've got weights on either end, and what they suggest on one end of that barbell is a portfolio of low-yielding, high-quality assets. Those assets, they admit, might produce negative yields after inflation, but will act as a buffer when markets are volatile. So this is short-term safe bonds. Could be munis, could be corporates, could be governments, but short-term duration, inside 7 years, and high credit quality. And on the other end, they suggest on that spectrum to take on more risk and to look outside of traditional fixed income investments. You might be looking at high-yielding bonds. You might be looking at dividend-paying stocks. You might be looking at, they didn't mention it in the article, things like these MLP funds. But you're on the search for income in either traditional or non-traditional high-yield places. And that is the barbell strategy that they suggest employing, that short-term safety and that longer-term more aggressive posture. The article also cites a few different funds that you might want to consider within the fixed income space, and if anyone would like a copy of that list, I'd be happy to share it with you. I'm going to turn it over to Brad to shed some more light on the market. Good morning, Brad.
Morning, Keith. Good morning, everyone. Just want to start off by saying there's just so much news, and I don't even want to joke around, real news, fake news. It's serious news. And it's coming in every single day. And apropos to the last remarks that Keith made on the bond market in the Barron's article, this is absolutely one of the most difficult markets I've ever experienced trying to navigate. It's difficult to know whether you should follow your heart or the market. And I think it's some form of a combination. It's really important in times like these to think about your long-term goals. I know that not everybody does this, but for those who are keeping balanced portfolio of equity and fixed income, I think it's important to stay true to those goals in spite of the low interest rates. high-grade municipals are still very cheap relative to other high-grade fixed-income products, and we're starting to see our first wave of downgrades as we expected. Last week, we saw New York City and New York State move from AA1 to AA2. To me, that's not making a tremendous statement. Moody's certainly didn't go out on a limb here. They're keeping the outlooks as negative, but that's not a major statement. I would have expected bigger downgrades, but I'm glad to see that they're optimistic. So I really want to keep an eye on the rating agencies and what they're doing. I want to avoid trying to be in a bond that goes from AA1 to Baa1. That's really where you get hit over the head and shocked. This week, there's going to be a lot of supply of municipal bonds, and I see that every day these treasury rates, the government bond rates, are slightly ticking up. And I know it still doesn't mean anything, but the 10-year is up to about 73 basis points, and the 30-year is up to about 1.53%. That's probably about 25, 30 basis points off higher than the realistic low yields that they hit, not the crazy low yields that they hit during the real panic. Just on one last comment on a personal note, I always enjoy going out to visit Lantern in Melville. It's always a great afternoon getting to see everybody out there. The one thing that I always think about before I go is what a bear the traffic's going to be. And last month there was a lot more traffic heading out there, which was annoying. But it did make me feel better about one thing, which is the Triborough Bridge bonds that I own. And I just say this because municipals are everywhere, and I hate to sound like the old Jim Liebenthal who used to say, you know, ride my subway, buy my bonds, because he was the first person to say that municipals are everywhere, and it was a great comment. But it's really important to keep an eye on things like this. I see a lot of traffic on the Triborough Bridge. I'm thinking about how much each car is paying to go over that bridge and how much it's helping the revenue stream for the Triborough Bridge bonds. These are the little things that I think it's good to keep an eye on, and it makes you think about the state of our local economy. And that's everything I have for today. Hope everyone has a great week. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. That's everything I've got.
Thank you for listening to Mr. Keith Lantern. For more podcasts, please visit our website, www.lanternwa.com.